Well, hello, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of Your Life Beyond You. I am your host, Terrence Campbell, and we are going to be tackling a topic that many people consider taboo, even in the church. And that is the topic of pornography. When you think of the idea of sex trafficking, what comes to your mind? I know for me, what comes to my mind is the thought of a child being stolen, kidnapped from their home, and forced into sex slavery. To think that there's a connection between that and pornography is very disturbing for me, and I believe it is for you as well. Today we have an individual who helps to paint the picture of how these two are connected and also to provide tools of how to help address this issue of pornography that plagues our country and world. Well, today it is my honor and privilege to introduce to you Mr. Joe Madison. Hey, Joe, thank you so much for being here with us today.
It's an honor to be here. Thanks so much, Terrence, for giving me some time with you.
Thank you, Joe. I really appreciate you being here with us, man. And I got to tell you, I am really thrilled for this, our time together, man. I believe that what we're going to talk through and the topic even is going to be so important and critical for those that are listening today. But before we get into our topic, Joe, I want to introduce you to the people and to our listeners and tell them a little bit about yourself. Share with us your family and how you met your wife and all that fun stuff.
Oh, man. Yeah. You know, I do quite a few podcasts, and I never do get that question, honestly. I usually will get a, hey, tell us about your organization or how you got into this, but never the backstory, so that's cool. I am a lifelong Texan. I met my wife in our senior year in high school, and I know I overmarried. Anybody that knows us knows I overmarried. I just stumbled right into the best thing of my life. And that blessing has just paid dividends and just, you can't even measure it. You know, our three kids are a blessing, but to have a family unit that is close, is something that is really, I see it as my greatest legacy. So as a dad, I got to protect that and I get to enjoy it at the same time. So yeah, thank you for asking about that.
Very cool, man. Yeah. So, you know, this is a show about living life beyond yourself. And one of the things that I aim to do with the show is to really cast a light on this idea of living life, not just for myself. You know, I think, Joe, so often people think about, hey, what's in it for me? What can I get out of this? How much money can I make out of this? How can I acquire this and all of that? And it's really focused on self. But one of the things that I love about you, man, is that I think that you exhibit the characteristic of really going after God and pursuing him, and not just for yourself, but that others may be inspired and encouraged. And so you actually work for an organization that I think does some pretty awesome things. It's called Demand Disruption. Can you tell us a little bit about Demand Disruption?
Yeah, certainly. You know, we've recently changed our name, but our purpose didn't change. Going back, I guess I left my career in oil and gas in 2015, 2016. I mean, it's a blur now, but I felt called at that time. We'd been volunteering in human trafficking, fighting human trafficking. And after about 6-7 months of that, I really, I think I told you this story once, that I was in church talking to a friend of mine. I said, you know, if I wasn't working, I feel like there's a real need for more people in this fight, and also specifically men, because there's just not a lot of men that are in this fight. And, and then I got laid off a few weeks later. So God was listening and he's like, hey, you said it in church, buddy, that's your fault. So that set me sort of on a path of trusting in the Lord and trying to be obedient, because that's really the greatest mm-hmm. thing I believe we can aspire to on this earth is yeah. just being obedient when called. And it's not easy. We all know that. But back to that first question you asked me about my family, I had a wife. When I looked at her, the man who had been working when she stayed at home for 25 years at that point in our relationship, 23 years, whatever it was at that point, and said, I think I'm supposed to just volunteer. I don't think I'm supposed to go back to work. And this woman said, let's pray about it. And a few days later, she said, okay, I'll go back to work. So the calling doesn't happen in a vacuum. And it also is, I think, synonymous with so many other parts of our life. So that got me into learning more about human trafficking, volunteering with other organizations, and just understanding this cycle, the cycle of exploitation and the buyers, the people who would be bought, those that are selling them, those that are exploiting them, the hard work that law enforcement does is so crucial. And understanding that spectrum, God put me in the path of a man named Bo Abdullah. Bo founded an organization to bring to light the dangers and the damage in our society of pornography. And
wow.
And when I first met him, we were preparing to do an intervention to work with a local police department. And we can talk about that later. But the reason I introduced that is because what demand disruption is today, recently changed our name from that, from Love People Not Pixels to Demand Disruption, is what it was that first day whenever I sat next to Bo and heard him talk to a man in handcuffs that was arrested for solicitation of prostitution. From the beginning, it was about changing the buyer's heart so that they never buy again, and trying to understand why somebody would buy somebody in the first place. And that endeavor has developed our organization into really being a disruptive force for the demand for illicit commercial sex.
Wow. Man, I think that is such a powerful story. And before I go any further about the story and how you all do this work, I'd like to highlight your wife and just her willingness to say, hey, let's pray about it. I think that's fabulous. Were there any fears that you had when you shared that with her, or maybe from other people?
There were no question. And she had fear. We both did. You don't go from being a salary earner to earning nothing and volunteering for over a year with no income without saying, okay, well, this is uncomfortable. But but in a whole nother podcast, we had our small group last week with some people that are friends that are becoming family very quickly. And one of the things that came up was when you're obedient, it's freeing because you have to worry about so few other things than when you're the one in control. I came to an understanding in our relationship with Christ a while ago. Another couple kind of shepherded us and gave us this discipleship through friendship. I understood that the more I control it, the more it's limited. And in our relationship, praying about things and talking about them as a couple, is our acknowledgement that as soon as we control it, it is limited. It's finite, and we can only do with it what we can do with it. And that is an embarrassingly small amount compared to what the Lord can do with it. So yeah, she stepped out on faith. That was scary. But
yeah,
there's some phenomenal stories and testimonies that have come from the last 6 years stepping out on that faith.
Wow. I love that. Something that I want to highlight that one of our mutual friends, Mandy, mentions in her book. She says this: everyone who has ever done anything impactful has felt fear throughout the process.
Yeah, that's right.
And I think it is absolutely phenomenal that you and your wife on the same page embraced this new endeavor to say, man, no income. I believe God has called me to volunteer to do this thing. But your wife steps up, who hadn't worked in, you said, 25 years?
No. She was doing some part-time work, but she'd homeschool kids for a good portion of that and didn't work during that time. But she has a nursing degree, and she left her career first and said, I want to homeschool the kids. And I said, I think that's what we're supposed to do. And then just kind of reciprocated when we prayed about it again, the other direction. And it gives, again, it's back to that freedom of just being obedient, because God's got something planned for you that you couldn't plan for yourself, and your impact.
Yes.
Your impact will not just benefit yourself, but others. And that, you mentioned Mandy's book, Made to Impact. Reading through that, there's a common theme. And that is, when you're willing to take that step and live a life that outlives you, that's sort of the theme of it in this podcast, for that matter. You leave a legacy that affects others that is part of God's plan.
I love it. I mean, that is so beautiful, man. And just the fact that couples can come together and do a work, a work that is pretty powerful. I mean, when I listen even to the name Demand Disruption, tell us about that name, kind of unpack that a little bit for us.
Yeah. So when you go through a name change, it's a terrifying thing, because you built an identity around that previous name. And we had a lot of people that were working with us that we called defenders. We trained people, and they play the role of being a defender in their own lives, in their communities, and for others. And so they get, you know, they have an identity wrapped around that name. And we actually had some input. We went ahead and planned. Bo still is an advisor with our organization. He's the founder. Christian has given us the direction from an identity and from crafting really how we communicate who we are and what we are. He does pretty much all of that. And we came together and came up with a short list. And there were some great names on there, I think. And there were some embarrassingly silly names when I look back on there. And so we opened that up to our group. And here's the cool thing about trusting those who are serving and working, trusting their input, the people that know you. We were really changing our name to catch up with the work they'd done fighting demand in the human trafficking circle. And so we had a list of about seven names. I still got them on my whiteboard. There was Fight Demand, the Defender Initiative, Demand Reduction, Defender Method, Demand. And then the last two that I have on my board are Demand Disruption and Love Disrupt Defend. Those were the last two names. And those finished one and two in our survey. And that told us that Love, Disrupt, Defend is our tagline. It's a call to action, and both of them are a call to action. We must demand a disruption to this cycle that turns people into products and people into purchasers and people into purveyors of that product. And if we do that, then we can also demand disruption beyond that. And then if we follow the tenets of loving someone, disrupt the cycle, and defending others, that Love, Disrupt, Defend tagline becomes another call to action. So that really is something that has resonated with who we've become because of our volunteers, our direction and purpose, and honestly, some of the ways that the Lord has guided our decision making.
Man, that is so well said. And I think that that is what attracted me to this organization in the first place. I actually went and spoke at a church, this church called The Bridge Montrose. And while there, I met a young lady there that when she found out that I lived in Pearland, she started talking about this organization called Love People, Not Pixels. And so I said, that's a really interesting name, and looked it up, and man, fell in love with the mission and the vision of the organization. Man. Ended up putting the organization on our website. We have a we have a resource page. One of our values as a church is that we want to resource the community. John Maxwell says that people change when they hurt enough that they have to, when they learn enough that they want to, and when they receive enough that they are able to. So this whole idea of being able to connect people to resources is at the heartbeat of some of our values at our church. So put it on our website, and then I am at a coffee shop here in Pearland, and I see this guy standing over in the corner with the shirt on. And so I walk up and just strike up a conversation. It just so happens to be you. And we, you know, just like, okay, well, cool. Very cool. Okay. Don't know what that was about, but cool. Yeah. And then I'm invited to to participate on a committee of an awesome organization called Young Life Pearland and go to the committee meeting. And here is this guy, Joe Madison, again. So,
man, isn't that just something? You know, that is, if that's not a testimony to what it means to share something with somebody and then just let God do the rest. I mean, Megan didn't have to tell you anything about us.
Right.
And that's who talked to you. She didn't have to tell you anything about us, but it was something that she felt led to do based on the conversation. And that's being in the moment. That's being obedient. Obedient isn't always changing your life, quitting your job and doing something that you don't know what to expect. Sometimes that tap on the shoulder, starting that conversation, showing this unconditional love and respect for others. And then here you are in a coffee shop.
Yeah.
I remember that a little differently than you do. I remember there's this guy walking, because you know, I'm like hyper aware of my surroundings. It's just like it's my responsibility. So there's this guy kind of walking, kind of listening in or standing kind of within where we were talking, and then walks away out of respect and then comes back. And finally I was like, hey, can I help you?
What's going on?
That, I felt so bad, man. I was like, I should have just assumed he was going to. Yeah, it was just really cool. It was a cool guy.
Yeah,
moment.
Man. Just this weird dude. This weird stranger standing next to my family. Like, what's up, man? What do you want? Yeah, man. Yeah, I think it's so awesome, man. So this whole idea of sex trafficking, you know, it almost sounds like something that's a distant thing, right? It's like, oh, something that happens in Las Vegas or just in this really raunchy part of the city. But help me understand, help our listeners have a true appreciation of this whole connection between porn and sex trafficking, because I think porn is something that's a little closer to home, maybe that I could relate to better, but this whole idea of sex trafficking seems so distant.
Yeah. And I think that's just such a crucial place to start in this discussion is if you get nothing out of this podcast, I want you to take this with you. This is for listeners. This isn't happening somewhere to some unfortunate few. This is happening here. And I'll zero that in for you. The United States is the number one consumer of illicit sex in many forms. Those outlets include pornography. They include illicit massage businesses. They include prostitution. And whenever you have that consumption rate, you must have that supply rate. You must be able to meet that demand. And so when we talk about this happening, and we talk about kids in middle school and high school being groomed from other people, or we see a normalization of pornography, what that does is starts to commonize something that is exploited by traffickers and by people that would take advantage of the vulnerable every day. It's a systematic exploitation. And so we have to understand that while pornography is something that we can all relate to, I mean, it's mainstream. We live in a hypersexualized culture. There's no two ways about it. And it's a little different than, I mean, I'm 47 years old. Growing up, everybody said, there's too much sex and violence on TV. Well, that doesn't hold a candle to what we've got now. And it's not on TV. It is one click away. And there is universal and pretty much unlimited access to some of the things that we are in no way prepared to watch and shouldn't be. It wasn't designed for that purpose. So the connection between pornography and sex trafficking is unmistakable. We as an organization have had this conversation for a very long time. And so we empathize with those that try to understand, okay, well, how common is this? How close to home is this? What does this look like? So what we tried to do was place exploitation doesn't just happen one day to someone somewhere. It happens over a course of events, a timeline. And so we've established a timeline that we do in our presentations and we share with people who are interested. That timeline starts all the way down around 8, 9 years old.
Wow.
The reason we start there is because that's the average age for first exposure to pornography for a boy or a girl. That's not only sad and scary. The saddest part about that is heartbreaking is the word average. You you can't get to an average of 8 or 9 without some very low numbers in there. And when we look at pornography and the impact it has on us, we've got to recognize that when somebody 9 years old, that's a boy, sees that violent, that the opposite of intimate kind of example of sex,
right,
and says, I guess that's what it is to be a boy in a relationship. And then a girl sees the same thing, the abuse, the, again, the complete opposite of intimacy or love or sharing anything in that moment, because pornography is not designed that way. It's designed to be a violent, aggressive expression of sex. I guess that's what it is to be a girl in a relationship. They start forming some very broken and damaging ideas. And they also on some level know that I probably shouldn't have seen that, so I don't want to tell anybody. Take that for a moment and think about that whenever we come to that crossroads of, do I talk to my kids about porn? Do I talk to my kids about sex and sexuality? Know this, on some level, pretty soon, if statistics are accurate, and many times in this world they get blown up, but this is one that I've seen play out over and over, we need to have these conversations, because that's a terrible thing to be a child and to be left with figuring that part out on your own.
Wow, man, I that really resonates with me, because I was a part of that as well. As a kid, came across a VHS. It wasn't, you know, maybe for some of our listeners, what is a VHS? Well, it was a VHS, and you had to be smooth when you watched the VHS, because it would start at a certain point. So if you didn't get back to that certain point in the VHS, then you could be found out.
Yeah, that's right. You had to rewind. You know, that's right. VHS came out right after stone tablets. So for some people.
Oh, there you go.
But yeah, that's true. Very true.
Yeah, man. And I remember the introduction of pornography into my own life. And like, I remember vividly my dad getting this cable set up. And I remember the cable guy looking at my dad and saying, okay, you may want to ask your son to step out for a moment. And I remember vividly, Joe, as I was walking out of the room, the man turned it to channel 39. It wasn't like, you know, 39 on regular TV, but it was like 39 on cable box. And I locked that thing in my memory, boy.
But you did. You were not nearly away from that room.
Man, locked it in. And just really, you know, the thing about pornography is how it is so, you can't get enough of it. It just takes you deeper and deeper into this world that's not even real.
So that's and, back to the timeline. That's a perfect transition back to that timeline, because at 8 or 9 years old, I see that, it confuses me, and I start to make some terrible decisions about sex and sexuality. Now let's fast forward to 12 or 13. And I didn't take a break from 9 years old until I got a smartphone and had unlimited access. No, that's the average age that kids are getting smartphones, around 13. If you're listening to this, parents, I beg you to be the uncool parent. Don't give that kid a smartphone. They don't need that. I mean, that's not going to stop it from being on someone else's smartphone. But we see that continuation, that there is absolutely this by design, it's a predatory industry. There are images that you will see, and then 3 weeks later, you will be watching something else, or 3 days later, in some cases, you will build a tolerance, just like with a drug. And so as that timeline continues, and as kids get older and they've consumed more pornography, they are further and further away from what it is to have a healthy, loving, God-blessed sexual relationship. And now it's about aggression. It's about, I'm going to hit that. It's not even a person anymore. It is acting out. There's this unlimited menu of ways to continually treat people like a product. That's pornography's model. And the reason that is so important to understand is we would never, never just tell a drunk or somebody who's struggling with alcohol, hey, just stop drinking. We would have a 12-step program. We would identify some of the triggers and reasons why that acting out of consuming alcohol or drugs, insert thing here, we have programs for those. Pornography, we don't talk about. And we don't really even talk about it as though it's a brain impacting and brain changing content, but it absolutely is. And we see that throughout our work. There are men we talk to that are at the point of arrest. They're 42 years old, and this is the first time they've ever talked to another man about pornography, and they start to see the connections. Wait a second. I wanted to buy sex because I saw it, and I watched it, and then I went to strip clubs, but I didn't get to engage in it, and so I continue to escalate. We've got something called the escalation dynamic that talks about the connection between pornography and trafficking, and I said this to a man at the point of arrest who had kind of blown me off. And I tell this story in our presentations, but Terrence, he said at the end of it, I thought he was just going to be like, okay, well, thanks, buddy. But he interrupted me and said, you just described the last 3 years of my life, pornography, strip clubs, webcams, and then now sex buying. I never thought it was connected. And when he realized that, he said, I've just been a consumer. I've just been played. He thought he was making decisions all along, and he wasn't. He was defaulting to the next escalation. So that's wow. Where we started 8 or 9 years old. That's why we say it's a timeline. There are points on this timeline that every single person in their family or themselves, you know somebody who is being affected on that timeline.
So hence this idea of demanding disruption.
Correct.
Disrupting this timeline and really this place that a person is going, that they're traveling to and really being led to by this predatory industry.
That's right.
Man, it is absolutely, it's frustrating to think about the fact that there's a connection between how egregious it is for sex trafficking, for little girls to be taken from their homes and prostituted and forced into sex slavery. And that there's on the other end of that, I'm contributing to that because I'm consuming pornography.
Yeah,
man.
And to not, and that's the thing, you know, we don't realize that what a buyer is. We talk about demand equals a sex buyer. And so I have presented to men's groups. I've presented to schools. I presented to you name it. I've been there. And it's not a great icebreaker to call a room full of men at a church, in a church meeting, sex buyers. Don't lead with that. But it's important that they understand that they're being played. This industry does not care about the people who are actors and get paid. And that's another subject we could go down and explain how that actually is exploitation. But they don't care about them. They don't care about you. You are simply a person with a pulse and a thumb and maybe even a credit card if you decide to pay for it. But the fact of the matter is, the billions of hours of free pornography are this. Let me stop telling people what they're experiencing. I'll tell you what I experienced. I struggled with porn for 6 or 7 years, and it has no hold over me now. At the time, it absolutely did, because I wouldn't have this conversation openly with whoever decides to click on this podcast.
Yeah.
And I would encourage you, if you're a parent and you're concerned about having this conversation right now, consider in the rest of this conversation, from what you heard to what you will hear, having your kid listen to this with you. Because we're not going to get into the graphic nature of things. That's not necessary. We're going to get into the deceptive nature of things.
Right.
And to realize that pornography is simply a sales cycle that starts with some introduction, maybe like the VHS you saw or movie channels that I had growing up that we knew at 10 o'clock or whatever, we could maybe find some content or whatever that was softcore pornography, according to the FCC. And then realizing that 90% of that has violence against women in it, because there is an escalation. You are now a customer. And the reason that is because the more aggressive it is, the more violent it is, the more varied it is, to put a nicer word on it, the more the brain begins to crave it. And there's a higher tolerance for some of the air quotes, normal sex. And the reason I bring this up is because kids, men, women, consumers, we don't realize that we're going from consumer to being consumed. We don't realize that this is actually part of the business model. As soon as you click on that free porn site, there are billions of hours of free pornography. The reason we say you're a sex buyer, well, wait a second, I didn't pay for it. Here's the reality. By clicking on that, it creates demand. And I'll ask you, Terrence, how much did you pay for your last Google search? You went on, you searched for something, a restaurant, whatever, and you clicked search. Did you get an invoice for that search?
No, I didn't. But I ended up paying for it, though.
do you ever pay for a Google search? No. No search engine is going to charge you because they have a business model that doesn't require you to pay up front. But you create demand. And so why is Google one of the most influential, powerful organizations on this earth? Because now they can go to their people who want to advertise, people that show up in those search queries and say, we have 4.5 billion customers. Here's what your price is. And so there's revenue on the back end. And that's the same model that the porn industry will employ. And so that's a lie that we can stop telling ourselves, or that's being told to us, is that, well, I'm not paying for it, so I'm not supporting it. I'm just checking out a few minutes of it. This is how we create demand in a society without actually reaching for our wallets.
Wow. That is startling and striking and sobering all at the same time. Wow, that's a really interesting concept when you mention about the Google search, because while I may not pay Google, I'm still contributing to the need or the product, because eventually I do buy because of what I've searched. That's right. You know, it eventually leads me to my site. Wow. So our time is so well spent here, but I don't want to miss this part, this idea of how does porn complicate or cause issues within relationships? Because I think so often there are issues that people are dealing with within marriage or within their relationships that at the root of it is a problem that is rooted in my porn addiction.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crucial to examine this from a relationship perspective. And just off the top of your head, you would think, well, yeah, we can look at it biblically and say that the Bible tells us if we lust after another woman or man, then we commit adultery in our heart. So we can look at it from a biblical perspective. But I will answer this more from an interpersonal relationship perspective. We talked about this being really a predatory technology. And we use some words like tolerance. We build up a tolerance as we view certain things. What we're doing is undergoing a brain conditioning. There's neuroplasticity in our brain. It allows us to change our thought patterns, to grow in our learning, among other things. I won't get into brain science because I will embarrass myself, but I will tell you that in studying it, the brain is neuroplasticity. We're seeing something and it shapes the way we decide. And now our brain and body, because the body does what the brain acknowledges and says, we are changing the way we function. So now I'm just watching pornography because I'm a red-blooded American male and I like girls. It's no big deal, right? Actually, what you're doing is programming your brain that what you see is sex. What your phone, when you reach for that phone, There are, when we talk to men that were arrested that have gone through our program, we talk with them very candidly about the role pornography has played in their ultimate decision making. Mm-hmm. And I had men tell me when I would pick my phone up and I would start to search, I'm not even on a site yet. I haven't even gotten there. My heart rate, I felt myself becoming sort of more aroused in anticipation of what I was about to search for. If that's not conditioning, I don't know what it is. And so, in a relationship, from a physical perspective, when we study this, we realize our brain has associated sex with the visual of seeing what we see, not intimacy with another person. And that's why we are also seeing these erectile dysfunction commercials are everywhere. Everywhere. Mm. Where were they in the 90s, early 90s? They weren't there. Do you know what else wasn't there? High-speed internet video downloads weren't there yet. And in about 93, we saw that, the YouTube sensation, we saw these different tube sites come on. And then, of course, the porn industry, they aren't adapting to technology. They are shaping technology. The porn industry has shaped technology for a very long time. And the internet is no different. High-speed internet, that was pushed by the porn industry because of the content, because of the videos, the uploads, the nature of their product, if you will. And we talked about VHS before. Those VHS tapes, the reason they're not beta tapes in their VHS, you want to go way back, beta was first and a better product in terms of audio and video. But the porn industry preferred VHS's technology, their longer run times, their menu capabilities. Beta didn't have that. And so the porn industry killed beta. That's how long they've been influenced.
Wow.
That was a bit of a side ramp that I took us on, but it tells you more about this industry and the power that it has. So coming back to relationships, now I've conditioned my mind. And then when I go to be intimate with my wife, or my wife with me, because it's not just men, or as a young person, we're seeing erectile dysfunction numbers that have exponentially exploded since the mid and early 90s because of the consumption of pornography and the scale that is continued to increase. And the cause and effect is, well, my brain now, when I'm with this girl or my wife, or she's with me, my brain's like, wait, this isn't sex. Turn the TV on or get your phone. We have got to the point where we've conditioned ourselves, and this technology has taken us away from the intimacy and what would naturally be a relationship-based sexual encounter that we share with intimacy and love. Now it's an act, and that action is driven by consumption from a video or our screen or what have you. That is really one of the ways that it hijacks relationships. But the other is it erodes trust. It makes it very complicated. I have a man who was going through a separation when he came to us, and he said that I was so afraid that I would have a dysfunction or I wasn't going to be able to act out that I tried to incorporate it into our relationship, and I watched it with my wife, and she felt betrayed. And so we didn't do that. And then we weren't intimate anymore because I was afraid that I wouldn't be able to perform. These are very things that nobody will tell you until you understand the physical, emotional, spiritual, and psychological consequences of viewing pornography.
Wow, man, that's a whole lot.
Wow. Sorry, that was a lot. I'm not good at capitalizing things. Sorry, that's the whole.
No, that was really good, man. As I sit here and just really take notes and think through some of the challenges, something that really just comes to my mind is the fact that you have given your life to this cause to demand disruption, and how it's not enough for you to say, hey, I don't have a problem with porn any longer. I'm good. But there's this sense to say, you know what? I want better for others, which I think is awesome, man. And that's really what this podcast is all about. People who say, yeah, it's not enough for me to just be good, but I want to see, and I want to help other people break free from something that had a hold of me. So yeah.
Footnote to that very quickly.
Sure. Because
when we take that, and so my personal experience, what I've seen in anecdotal, I'll take that to a study level. So the American Academy of Matrimonial Lawyers, yes, there is such a thing. I wouldn't normally cite divorce attorneys as my credible source for information. But the American Academy of Matrimonial Lawyers questioned 350 divorce attorneys, and they found out that roughly 60% reported that internet porn played a significant or the primary role in divorces. So take a moment and bring yourself to that table, that divorce table where the irreconcilable differences and the other thing, where your marriage is being severed. That has always been finances. That's right. The number one thing. But we're seeing a wide range, 350 divorce attorneys with their clients, 60% report that internet porn played a significant role in the divorces. That is a telltale sign that isn't a warning sign. That's the sign we saw going 100 miles an hour toward the cliff, and we barely understand what it means. We've got to stop and realize it absolutely has an effect on our relationships.
Wow. Man, that's huge. Man, thank you for sharing that. And it's really something it's sobering, man, to think of the reality that when we introduce something that seems as innocent and individualistic as porn, like it's just me, right? I've heard people say things like, I'm not hurting anybody.
Yeah.
It's just me. But how there are these ripple effects of that can be traced back to my individual decision. So something that I want to ask you, and I'm sure you get asked this all the time, but how can the average person help disrupt the demand for porn? If I'm sitting here and I'm listening to this podcast and I'm thinking to myself, man, I want to get involved in this fight. My mom used to say all the time, if you find a good fight, get in it. Mm-hmm. So if someone says, I want to get in this fight, I want to disrupt the demand for porn, how can they help with that?
Yeah, porn and then even trafficking at a greater level. So when we look at pornography, we are really more of a, we are an awareness, like this has been about awareness, this podcast, but our whole really purpose for being is the preparedness org. We're not about telling you that these are terrible things. We're telling you these are terrible things. And here's how you now understand it a little better. And here's some ways to change your legacy in your family and in your community, because that's really what we're doing. Even if we do nothing, we're establishing a legacy. Let's not be afraid. Let's be prepared. And when we're prepared, we can have conversations in our families that are edifying. We're building each other up, saying, you know what? If I was, try this, parents, if you hear this, or if you're a young person listening to this, you'd be like, my parent will never say that to me. I challenge you. Start right now. Go to your kid who's 15 years old or whatever, has a smartphone or has access to the internet if it's a 10-year-old, and confess. If I was your age and I had that, I would have destroyed myself, because I absolutely have told my kids that, because I would have. If I had a smartphone, if I had internet, I mean, internet came around on my 18th birthday, you know, dawn, you know, sound like the dawn of time. But in 1991, I was 18 and I heard about this thing called the internet. But if I was a young boy or a young girl and I had access to this, and then culture kept telling me, oh, it's okay, it's natural, don't worry about it. My goodness, what a landmine. So what a minefield, I should say. As parents, we should be having these conversations with our kids. Also, we should be really open to learning more. What we've talked about in this podcast is all based on research, and that research equips us to make better decisions. It also equips us to forgive each other.
Yeah.
When we understand that somebody has normalized this and we've gone along with it or whatever, we have a choice to make. It hurts and there's a betrayal level, but we can also forgive in a way that says, you are realizing that this was something that has affected you beyond what you first expected. And if they're getting help, if we're forgiving and we're working toward things, that's another power that we have. Another way to really disrupt the impact that pornography has is to tell the truth about it with each other. And that's, we talked about it with our kids, but with each other as well. You know, as men, we could sit in a group and porn is so normalized, it's part of each joke. And I'm not the porn police that kicks the door in every time somebody makes a joke or talks about it. But what I won't tolerate is to be in a group on Facebook where somebody shares something.
Right.
I won't vilify them or embarrass them. I will say, I make a conscious effort to avoid this in my life because I truly do understand the consequences of it and how this stuff affects us. And I don't want it in our group, guys, or I don't want it to be part of our conversation. That's taking some accountability. It's not preaching, but be prepared to tell your story or have have your own testimony, just like with your faith. If your testimony is that I understand this better and I'm making some changes to make sure that I'm not part of creating demand, which can lead way up to human trafficking, then that's a conversation starter. And nobody can tell you that you're wrong for taking your own stance. Nobody can argue with your testimony.
Man, well said, brother. And I appreciate that. That really casts some light and gives us a sense that, hey, this is something that we can tackle together, that we don't have to be afraid to admit and to share. One of our values as a church is brave transparency and just being able to live in the light and be honest with where we are. I always like to say, if you realize, hey, this is where I am, that's okay. What's not okay is for you to stay there. Mm-hmm. And yeah, man. So this is a man, our time has just zipped by. I'm surprised at how quickly this time has gone by. I mean, this is my first invitation to you, man, we got to have you back because there are so many more questions that I want to ask. And so there are classes and things like that that you all provide. Can you give our listeners some information on how they can have you possibly come out and facilitate a discussion on this topic?
Absolutely. First, I'd invite everybody to join us on our Facebook page and on Instagram. Demand Disruption is the name of our organization. And as you go on Facebook and social media, this is a tough topic. You know, we don't typically go and search out things that make us uncomfortable. So let it come to you and tap you on the shoulder a little bit and say, hey, here's a victory, or here's something that we found, or here's what's going on in the human trafficking world. Mm. That type of awareness, having it come to you, to your inbox, you've now got information, but you've got the opportunity to share that. And that can be very impactful without you going on a rant. You can forward share, and people will not be able to unsee knowledge when they see it, and hopefully it will benefit others. So you can share on social media. You can go to our website, demanddisruption.org. And what you'll find is this is less about us and more about how you can get involved, how you can get to work. It really is a preparedness site. It's not about human trafficking 101. This is for people who are understanding that trafficking is not happening somewhere, but in their own community, in their own lives, and are ready to go in and start doing things about that. And you can do that on three levels. From your own family level, with our, we've got presentations that we do called Porn and Parenting, just acknowledging the reality that pornography is part of our parenting life, and we have to have these conversations. But then we have workshops where we're going to dig in 2.5 hours. We're going to really show you some tools on how to work on those. You'll also find from a position of helping one-on-one. That's loving people. And so we've got a tab on there that talks about what it is to be prepared to talk with others who are struggling with an unwanted sexual behavior. And if you're that person, you can reach out right on our website for help. And then finally, our community, ways to take back kingdom territory in our community, territory that honestly is exploiting other people, whether it's an IMB, illicit massage business, or other things in our community. So we want to prepare people to do all of those things. But finally, I would be remiss if I didn't mention this, because Terrence, you are leading by example. This is crucial to have this conversation in our churches. And just growing faith is not afraid to have this conversation. And it's okay if we were afraid. Courage is not the lack of fear. Courage is doing it anyway.
Yeah, amen.
And that's what I've chosen to do. And the Lord will bless that. But we have a program called the Church Body Project. I realize that the sleeping giant in this fight is the church. And man, am I lifted up whenever we have churches courageous enough to have this conversation. And if you don't feel like your church is a place where you can go and say, I'm struggling, or I want to know how to help people who might be struggling, or I would like to get in this fight against sex trafficking, then check out the Church Body Project. It's on our website. You can find it. And at the bottom of that, you'll get some overview of the program. But at the bottom, you'll be able to fill out an information sheet and say, I want to bring this to our church. I want to begin this discussion. Because when our churches go from being a courtroom where we feel like we're being judged, not that the church is, but we kind of internalize that, it goes from that to a workshop where you can bring stuff and say, y'all, this is broken. I need help.
Yes.
Or I want to help fix things. man, that is a realization of the kingdom on earth. And so thank you for leading by example. Terrence, this has been an awesome 45 minutes.
Man, thanks, Joe. Man, I am so thankful for your wealth of knowledge and just your willingness to share so transparently and courageously, just leading out and being a person that was willing to take a step of faith to first serve in a capacity where you volunteered and now as the executive director of an amazing organization, leading the work that is so needed, man, in our society, brother. Thank you so much, Joe. We appreciate you, man.
Yeah, thank you.
Wow, what an amazing show we had today. For more information about the organization Demand Disruption, you can find their information in the link or in the description of this podcast. And again, to our listeners, we thank you so much for taking the time out to engage in this very important discussion. We cannot leave this broadcast without thanking those who have made this podcast possible. The great people, friends, and partners of Growing Faith. We want you to know how thankful we are for all of your support. The mission of Growing Faith is that we are leading people searching for more into a thriving relationship with Jesus. You can find more information about Growing Faith at www.growingfaith.net. Again, my name is Terrence Campbell, and you have been listening to Your Life Beyond You.